Hi, I'm Otto. Welcome to Ellen and Sarah's podcast.
Okay, this is the first time we've ever had someone back a second time because we had such success with Shrink Chicks.
Well, there's been a few people we've wanted back. I mean, we want all of our guests back.
That's not what I said. I said this is the first time we've had somebody back a second time.
Yeah.
And so we have Shrink Chicks, Jennifer and Emily. We really liked them. We had such a great conversation with them. We dove deep last time about sex and all these different topics that, you know, we haven't really explored with somebody. And we just think that they are very cool, modern, progressive, forward-thinking, accessible therapists that say the F word and feel like they're your friend. And we learned a lot. And people loved it so much. So we want to have them back.
I could talk to them for 5 hours. We talked about parent-child relationships. We talked about parenting. We talked about couples having separate bedrooms. Mm-hmm. We talked about just every relationship dynamic you can imagine. We talked about therapy, obviously, because they're therapists. We really covered just...
Yeah, there's not really one. Like last time had sort of a focus. And this time it's a little all over the place, but in a way of just sort of navigating all the different areas of life that they could give advice on. And we also kind of like made it personal to ourselves. We basically had our own therapy session.
We definitely monopolized 20 minutes of our own personal shit.
But I think that's okay. Cause you know what? If I'm dealing with something, that means other women are dealing with it. If you're dealing with something, other women are dealing with it.
Yeah.
Like whatever issues are going on in our own lives are just reflections of issues in everyone's lives. So,
yeah.
We do think you'll get a lot out of this. We already know you like them because that episode did so well.
There's so many nuggets of just advice of like true, mm-hmm. like inspiring. Yep. Okay. Well,
let's let everyone listen to it.
I know. I'm just reminding people like to listen to it.
Well, they're here. So they're probably gonna listen. They're listening to the intro.
Maybe some people just listen to intros.
Who listens to an intro
and then, ladies,
and then stops listening?
I don't, people are weird. I don't know.
Oh, so now our listens are weird. Okay. Good to know how you feel. Good to know. Oh, you just snorted and you snorted. All right. Ready? Let's begin.
Hey.
Hi, guys.
How
Hi.
We are so, first of all, this is the first time we've ever had someone back for a second episode. Because
we
that is how
so lucky.
That is how much we enjoy talking to you, and that is how much people enjoyed getting your advice, listening to us speak openly. And something that I found very interesting about talking to you guys is that
can I say hi to them?
In 1 second. People always tell us that we really like make people open up and speak really freely and openly and honestly. And then mm-hmm. I felt like you guys got us to like go deeper than we typically do and open up about personal stuff that we don't always do. And so I thought it was like a really great combination.
We're honored.
We're honored, and we had so much fun the first time around.
By the way, the thing that stood out to me the most from that conversation was freezing. How
yes.
women, we don't necessarily say yes, we don't say no, we don't give a clear signal, we just freeze. And that,
yeah.
you know, boys or whoever the other partner is in that situation has to pay attention to the girl or the person who is just feeling frozen, because it's so much like, you realize how much conditioning we have to be so scared of someone being mad at us or being embarrassed or being uncool when you're young.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just stop in your tracks because you don't know what to do next. And that is a sign that you don't want to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Terry Real, who wrote The New Rules of Marriage and I Just Don't Want to Talk About It and How Can I Get Through to You? And like really some really amazing books. One of the things he talks about that I really appreciate is, and I lost my thought.
It's gone.
Wait, while you're thinking about, while you're having that thought, I also had a lot of messages from women saying, thank you so much for being open and honest about, you know, your sex life. And, you know, I think
I'm pretty sure Simon hasn't listened to the episode yet, which I'm really happy about because I talked about our sex life.
Because he froze the first time you guys.
Because I just.
Aaron did not sense the signs from
I just
Simon.
I don't know if he knows that I let the world know he's a sex addict, basically.
Well, he knows his issues.
If you spend 5 minutes with him, you can feel the energy, his very sexual energy. So
I feel it all the time.
He's very sexual with you.
Very.
Yeah.
Very. He's always undressing me with his eyes. Mm-hmm. Always.
Well, my thought about Terry Real. It's back. One of the things he always talks about is that it's for good reason that we freeze. It is for good reason that we don't know what to say. It is for good reason that we end up fawning. Like, our responses are because it's actually not a very safe world, right? Like, we have been bullied, we have been shamed, we have been demonized and moralized. So, like, it's with good reason we do all of these things. It's just that the behaviors that we have adapted with turn maladaptive later on. So we have been trying to adapt in a world, and then it sometimes hurts us when we get into a really wonderful marriage and I'm not able to say, hey, I actually don't like when you do that. That actually doesn't feel good on my body, because I've just adjusted to saying, okay, I'm just going to think about the laundry I have to do until you're done and finished and you ejaculate and then I'm out of here.
Also, you know, something that I hadn't really thought about until we had this conversation was, until I got married and or really was in a relationship, in a healthy relationship, I didn't realize how unhealthy my dating life had been before, and how unhealthy my sex life had been before, and how bad my self-esteem had been, and how much I had tolerated and put up with. Like, I knew it on a surface level where I was like, oh yeah, I have terrible taste, or I like always date the worst people, or whatever. But like, being in this thing I'm in now, I mean, my marriage, you know,
just this thing, this thing that I got going on for the last 2 years,
being in this relationship, like I almost looked back and became like more fucked up and sad looking at my history and myself. And I was like, fuck, Erin, you've put up with some crazy shit in your life.
Are you
Why
cry
did you
in this
do
episode?
That? No, I'm not going to
so
cry.
If you're going to cry, I'm not equipped.
Okay, well, we should look at that.
We are.
We're very comfortable with crying.
Thank you. No, I think I just feel like sometimes it takes being in something healthy to make you realize, like, we live in such discomfort all the time. And I know, like we've said before, sort of focusing on genders isn't necessarily like the most like relevant way to talk about it. But I do believe that women, we do sit in discomfort more easily than men do. And I realize now how uncomfortable I was for so long and how I just allowed it. And it's like made me so sad. I'm like, God, I wasted so many years just never asking for what I wanted and never being clear and never like standing up for myself. And I just want other women who listen to this to make that change earlier than I did. Like, I just read a message 10 minutes ago from a girl who DM'd me and said, I need to tell you that I listened to the podcast with you guys and I realized that you said something like dating is supposed to feel good. Like, you're supposed to feel good in those moments. And I realized I'm in this thing and it doesn't feel good. And I've been so scared to actually tell him that because he wants to be more casual than I want. I want to be more serious. And I finally just had the conversation with him and was like, this doesn't feel good. Like, I don't like that this feels so casual. I want it to be serious. And he was like, okay, I respect that. It's just not what I want. And she's like, and so it doesn't really have a happy ending. And I just wrote her back and I said, I actually think that is a happy ending.
We're so socialized to almost put up with the bare minimum, and that especially if our self-worth is lower, and I think a lot of us go through this in trying to figure out who we are, that as women, we were taught, like, you derive your self-worth from relationships. And if you can be successful in your relationships, then you're worthy in some way. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that leads a lot of us into these relationships that we're not happy in, that are unhealthy. And I know that earlier we were saying, okay, I wish that we would figure this out earlier. But I think in a way, we almost learn from those experiences, hopefully.
And this is what we start to talk about. Sometimes we have the right decision and the smart decision, and they're not the same thing. The smart decision, let's talk about like a financially smart decision, right? So let's take the example of White Lotus, staying with the guy who has money, where I don't have to work anymore. I don't have to have
smart
a
decision.
Job. Yeah, right. So that's the smart decision, right? Investing in the property, or don't spend anything, or don't take the risk. And then there's the right decision, the decision that brings us joy, that maybe is the riskier decision. Maybe it's the one people would say, oh God, don't do that. Stay with this other guy who had the trust fund. That's let's go for that one. But he's a fucking asshole. And so what's the difference between the decisions you have in your life, what's right and what's smart? And you're going to get a lot of influence from people in your life who want you to make the smart decision because it's safer.
And it's like, like it's the thing that everyone can kind of collectively agree on, right? And so because what might be right for one person might not be right for someone else. And so we come to these conversations with our own perspective of, oh, like, you know, he has so much money, or there's such stability there, is such a great job. Like, you should definitely stay in that relationship. But what matters is how you are feeling about it. What is going on for you in that relationship?
Oh, yeah, no, Aaron and I have never stayed anywhere for money or for like,
no,
that's just not a, anyone, because we just know too many rich people who aren't happy.
That aren't happy.
Honestly. To be,
it's, right. No, just, but I will say I have been in relationships before where it's not that I was there for the wrong reason, but that like, I think
you actually preferred unemployed and broke.
I did.
That's actually I more did, yeah. was your speed.
But I was in situations where the person was like famous or powerful and they had a position in the world. And it wasn't that I was like interested in them because of that, but it gave them this like power in a room that made me feel safe. Like, I need you to be larger than life so that I feel like I'm worthy of love. Like, if this person is choosing me when they have all these options, then it makes me feel lovable because I just felt bad about myself. So sometimes you'd go out with someone and you'd be like, this isn't really my person, but everyone seems to think that they're like the hottest, coolest, like the person everyone wants to be with. And if that person wants to be with me, then I must be good, right?
There's
I must
be
good
enough.
There's
gotta be like a correlation between that and you having like a powerful, like rich dad.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Like yeah, there has to be.
I was always used to the dad walks in the room, pays the bill for everybody, you know, has this big personality, takes over, takes all the air out of the room. Everyone focuses on that person. And then you date someone that just kind of is there and you're like, hello, wake up. No right. one's paying attention mm-hmm. to you. Like you're supposed to command the entire room to be yours. And that is an addicting thing to be around. You chase that feeling.
Right. And you know what? The reason why that happens sometimes, you start to associate the love that you got from your relationship with your parent and say, oh, well, that must be what it looks like in a relationship with someone else, right? If they command a room, if they walk into a room and everyone's looking at them and that must mean that they are going, that there's going to be some sort of love and connection or relate. At least I understand or I feel comfortable with this level of relating because I'm used to it.
Mm-hmm. There's a concept in family therapy called homeostasis, which is that the body always wants to remain in homeostasis, which is I'm going to always be attracted to what I've known.
Yes.
So
even if it feels bad.
Even if it feels bad, exactly, right? Because the body can't differentiate. It just wants its normal. So if I had a parent who I had to, if I was very parentified as a child, I always had to emotionally support my parents because of addiction, we'll say, right? I'm going to always want fixer-uppers. This idea of daddy issues, it came from somewhere, which is that like we're still trying to solve some unresolved childhood shit. It doesn't have to F up our whole lives, but it's going to impact it. And you're going to feel that magnetic pull towards something that feels like personal and normal and the same.
Yeah.
You're going to magnetically pull towards it. In the room of a million people, you're going to find that guy.
By the way, it just goes back to the thing we were talking about earlier, where like you sit in discomfort because it is normal to you. And right. one thing I always
do you think men sit in discomfort less than women?
I do think that they, well, you guys answer, but I think they do less.
Yes.
Yes. I'm going to say like a perfect example is like if, you know, a man is sick with like a cold, it's like they have like the worst flu the of man their flu. Life. The man
They're so
flu.
Dramatic.
Right? So dramatic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And women like, are more, women are better at sitting in physical discomfort. But,
yeah.
And men just won't be uncomfortable.
Refuse.
They've never had to be. Right? It's a different thing that the world has in some way stopped for them. So there is part of this, you know, that you started to say earlier, like, oh, I know it's not good to talk about in terms of genders, but sometimes it's very helpful to think about it in terms of different genders, of what we've been socially constructed to put up with in different genders.
So I want to ask you, yeah. because we never actually asked this, like, it's just a general question. Is therapy for everyone? Because where I'm sitting, I think there is nobody that should not be taking advantage of therapy, whether it's in person, whether it's with you guys, you know, over the internet. There are so many different ways that people can access therapy. Is there like any human that shouldn't and wouldn't benefit from therapy? I say no.
I think we're also talking about, when you talk about therapy, I'm thinking that you're talking about like one-on-one.
What, with a professional.
Exactly, right? But the thing is that therapy, we consider therapy as anything that works. So there are some people that don't have verbalization. Maybe it was not safe ever to have verb usage growing up, and then they're going to need to go see like a somatic therapist that is like literally expressing through the body, right? So there's so many different types of therapy. So everyone should be in some type of therapy. And it doesn't mean you have to be in forever. You don't need to be with the same therapist for the rest of your life, for all around the days, but to find something that works for you. And sometimes psychotherapy and just talk therapy is not for everyone.
Sometimes it's I'll talk to my therapist and I'll literally just be like asking him about what's going on with him. It'll be an hour of just kind of, but I freaking feel better after. Mm-hmm. Just like someone's there to just like listen and not judge you. I get judged all day long by this chick and my children, and I'm just constantly being told all the shit that I'm doing wrong. And sometimes it's just nice to talk to someone who doesn't know you well enough to know all your bad qualities.
But he probably knows that, you know? I mean, you guys would know best.
He probably knows about your bad qualities.
He knows that, that that's what you need during that hour. Me, I think like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you guys will agree and you know better than I do, but like everything that you do or say, the therapist is taking into account. Everything, the way you interact with your therapist.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
However you're talking to your therapist is like, that's all taken into account. The first time I met my therapist 8 years ago or whenever it was, I was sitting there and I looked at her ring and I was like, oh, that's a really beautiful ring. Like, where did you get that? Your engagement ring is so pretty. And she goes, oh, thank you. Why are you asking? Why are you telling me that? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I just think it's pretty. And she was like, why are you really telling me that? And I was like,
wait, your therapist?
Yeah. Oh. Barbara. And
you were maybe trying to distract.
No, I said, honestly, I'm sitting here. It's my first session with you. And I want to open up and talk to you about my life, but I'm scared that you're not invested at all in what I'm about to tell you. And I feel self-conscious. So I wanted to endear myself to you. And I thought maybe if I compliment your ring, then you're going to be like, oh, this is a nice person. I should give a shit about what she's about to tell me. It felt scary opening up to a stranger who doesn't care about my life yet. You know, she has no context for anything. And so I think a good therapist really helps you like just look at yourself all the time. It doesn't always have to be bad. Like sometimes I have a therapy session and she's like, God, you've made so much growth and I'm so proud of you. And I am just catching her up on my week. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it changes with every client. There are some clients who come in who might need a year of that like banter or need more time to feel more comfortable in therapy. And there's clients that come in and are like, here's everything I went through throughout my entire life. And it changes between clients. It also changes from session to session with specific clients. So there might be times in which you go in and you need to just talk, like shoot the shit for an hour. And then there might be times you go in and you're like, I'm ready for this. You know, like I can go into some deeper stuff today. And so something that we always do is we say that to our clients, right? Like we want to meet you where you are, that it's important for you to come in, bring what feels right for you. And we go from there. Because if you feel like you have a good connection, relationship with your therapist, they're going to be able to say, what do you need today, right? Like, what's going on for you? They're going to be able to track that for you. Some days you're going to go and you're like, I can't go that deep today. Mm-hmm. Other days you're going to go and you're going to say, I can do it. I can do the work. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
So if someone is wanting or curious about therapy, you say there's a lot of different types of therapy. And so how do you know what is the right type of therapy for you? Like how to navigate therapy and your therapist and boundaries and like what's right for you?
So there's a ton of different types of therapists. The most common ones you're going to see are psychiatrists, the people who can give you meds. There's the doctors. There's the psychologist. Also people who have typically a doctorate level and are going to give something like a diagnosis or do evals. There are licensed marriage and family therapists that were looking at systems. There is licensed professional counselor. Like there's like so many different types, right? But the difference is we're all looking from a different therapeutic lens. So one of the things you could do when you're therapist shopping is to say to someone, one, what do you believe about the room? How do you use silence to the room? That's one of the things you asked about. Do you give a diagnosis? Do you do a treatment plan? Are you collaborative or directive in how you sit in that room? Do you leave space for me to figure it out myself? Do you give advice? Right? So like these are general questions you could say when you're doing your therapist shopping. When you go, a lot of people end up finding the number one way we think you should find a therapist is from word of mouth and referrals, but a really common way is going to be Google. So people are going to go on Google, and they're typically the number one search result is going to be Psychology Today. You put in your zip code, and then you're going to see a lot of horrible pictures of a lot of weird people that say a lot of different weird shit. And they're going to say something along the lines of, oh, I use emotionally focused couples therapy, or I'm coming from cognitive behavior.
A lot of like psychobabble.
A lot of psychobabble bullshit, right? But what you're going to want to ask is, how were you in their room? Now Psychology Today has like that there's like actually a video you can watch of someone. That's very helpful to see like what are their mannerisms like? How do they talk? How do they describe something? If you are someone who does not like that, how does that make you feel? You're going to want someone who has more of a down-to-earth approach, right? Someone who, when you say, where did you get that beautiful ring? They say, oh, thank you so much. It actually belonged to my mother's. Thank you for noticing. How are you feeling today? Right? There's going to be some people do that and other people who say, well, what's that bring up for you? Why is that important to understand where I got this ring from? And there's a whole bunch of different techniques. None of them is wrong. Therapists, like all humans, love to judge each other. They all have a lot of opinions about who's best and what's the worst and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, therapy is whatever works. So those different types of therapy that we talked about, like somatic therapy, which is like, you know, often like trauma stored in the body, right? So like somatic therapists are using a lot more movement. They're trying to get that trauma out of the body. There is something that's called EMDR, which is like basically you're like watching this light while talking about trauma. It helps reprogram the brain. There's people that are using
hypnosis,
psychedelics and psychotherapy. There's typical talk therapy. There are so many different routes. And one of the things that's hard to know is where the hell to begin with this. So therapist shop, always ask for a free consult on the phone. Ask them if they have any time. Ask for people around you who you feel like you dig their style of therapist they've liked, because there are so many different avenues. And just like you might go to a doctor and be like, I don't care if that's the best damn doctor in Beverly Hills, that guy was a douchebag, you're going to feel the same way about certain therapists.
And it's in a way sort of like dating, right? Like where some person might work for your friend and not work for you. And we always say, like, if you're going into session with a therapist and you're not getting anything out of it, or you don't feel connected to them, find another therapist.
Is it considered a faux pas to give advice as therapists, like in your sessions?
It depends what kind of therapist you are. So psychologists are like typically someone who has like more like old school,
like psychoanalytic training. That's the type that you will get where you will sit in silence for a while and they'll kind of wait, where they're more of a blank slate and they're not going to give you much. Mm-hmm. And they wait for you to kind of get to it on your own. There's a lot of psychoanalytic training in that, which once again works for some people and it is not going to work for other people.
I want to be
Go ahead.
Sorry. I want to be really careful how I say this, because mm-hmm. mental illness is a very real thing and medication changes people's lives, keeps them alive, enables people to have health, all that. We know that. Mental illness is real. Mm-hmm. But do we not all feel, especially with children, that people are just so overly medicated right now? That like,
yes. Yeah.
That like, I know a handful of people who are like, I'm depressed. I'm getting on antidepressants. I'm like, of course you're fucking depressed. You're in a horrible marriage. You lost your job. You stay in bed all day. You don't see sunlight. Of course you're depressed. Like, let's like get to the root of why you're depressed. Get out of that marriage. Let's get a little vitamin D. Go out like... we're so quick to throw medication on people, especially
young. Numb the feeling of being depressed instead of attacking the actual reasons you're depressed.
Yes, because it is a real thing to need to be medicated for certain people. Yeah. But I do want to have this conversation in a respectful way, if possible.
So we like to think about the therapy as preventative medicine. The same way that moving your body and what you consume is preventative medicine, so is therapy. So all the time we'll hear people that one of the things that we prefer for doctors to ask. Like, we have a lot of doctors that refer to us, right? So we'll have doctors, someone will come in and be like, I need to be on antidepressants. They'll say, great. Have you seen a therapist first?
Have
you tried to talk this out first? Because really, it should be together. Therapy, meds work the best in collaboration with therapy. They're created together. But of course we have an over-medicated society. Man, it's America. So you have to sit here and say, okay, what else am I doing? No amount of Zoloft can help you if you hate your husband. It just doesn't matter. But at the same time, when I had postpartum depression, I went on Zoloft and holy shit, within 72 hours, I didn't want to die anymore. So you can see the very real difference that medication does. But medication is one piece of the puzzle. It is not the solution.
Okay, this one is really hard for me to say. ZocDoc.com. ZocDoc.com.
Oh my God, ZocDoc.com.
But are you saying it's easy or hard?
It's easy.
ZocDoc.com.
ZocDoc.com.
Okay, but it's hard.
Okay, it's okay. Not that hard.
Anyway, the point is that we are very into ZocDoc.com. Okay? So basically what it is if you need to see a doctor,
a dentist, then, a dermatologist, yeah. In your case,
well,
a
those are doctors.
Surgeon.
Just so you know, they're doctors.
In your case, a psychiatrist.
Okay, but those are, I said if doctors, and you said and dentists. Dentists are doctors, and that's rude to you for you to give them a different category.
In my mind, you were just singling out like internists.
No, I said doctors, which really is like a large okay. group of
yes,
medical
going.
People. Okay. So what this is like basically the way things work now typically is you need to see a doctor. So you like search and you find one that's good and then you wait very long to book an appointment and then you rearrange your schedule to go there and then you finally go in, you find out that they don't take your insurance and it's very expensive. So you either pay, you know, hundreds of dollars on the spot or you leave and don't get that weird mole checked out.
I just
so,
like that.
ZocDoc.com gives an alternative solution.
What I like is that ZocDoc, the people have spoken because it aligns you with like ratings. So you know, all these people go on and then they rate their experience. And that is part of the app. So yeah, I like that. I'm not trying to go to a dermatologist that has like a one.
It is a great one-stop shop for recommended, highly recommended physicians, dentists, dermatologists, psychiatrists,
things,
eye doctors, other specialists. They have you covered in every area. You know that they take your insurance because you put your insurance into the app and then it tells you who is available.
Well, that part's amazing. All the times you find a doctor, you're excited, you go and they're like, oh, yeah, no, we don't take that insurance. I mean, that's just.
And you can see the doctor immediately, ASAP, all the way. It is not. There's no waiting around. Now is the time to prioritize your health. Go to ZocDoc.com/Foster
and
download.
A little slower.
And download the ZocDoc app.
ZocDoc.com.
And download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Many are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc.com/Foster.
I feel like Sakara is everywhere. Everyone's house I go to, I see Sakara. Everyone's Instagram, I see. Everyone is on the Sakara train.
You see it
train.
In Vogue. You see it in Goop.
Yeah.
You see it in the New York Times.
I'm so happy for those girls.
Oh, yeah.
I have those girls' cookbook. That's
well,
not.
I have their phone numbers because we know each other.
Oh, really?
Yep. Great girls.
Sakara is a nutrition company. We've talked, guys, if you listen to our podcast, if you are listeners, you know about Sakara.
Yeah. But they are clean, plant-rich, ready-to-eat
organic.
Meals. I'm not there yet.
Oh.
Clean, plant-rich, ready-to-eat meals that nourish your body with whole organic ingredients and retrain your palate and help you break up with your sweet tooth.
Here's the thing. I want to eat healthy, but I also want to be happy. I want to be healthy, but I also want to enjoy what
you
I'm
being
eating.
Happy is a bigger thing than I think your food.
Yes, but a lot of the times when you associate like eating healthy with like food that kind of tastes bland and gross. No,
the food is
and
very
this
flavorful.
Food is amazing.
And there's no meat or dairy products, so it's all very clean. You know, when you have a delivery food service that has that's just plant-based, it doesn't get old as quick. And you can experience their best-selling Metabolism Super Powder and Metabolism Super Bar to control your sugar cravings, reduce bloating, boost energy, and reduce fatigue. They also have wellness essentials like the supplements. Oh, I love their herbal tea. They have a very, very good detox tea that I love. They all support your nutrition, and we really think you guys should try it.
Yeah. Do we have a code? Oh, we have discount.
Yeah. So right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off your first order when you go to sakara.com/foster or enter the code FOSTER at checkout. That is sakara.com/foster and get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/foster. A question we've had a couple times come up for you guys. Do therapists have favorite patients or patients
yes.
that they don't like?
I wouldn't say that we do have favorites. It's hard not to, right? Because in life, don't you?
Yeah, of
don't
course.
You have someone who you connect with, someone who you're like, you want to know why, like this person fucking shows up. And that doesn't mean anyone's treated any differently, but like, come on, like there's days of the week where you like one kid more than the other. And that's not on purpose. That's literally human nature.
Yeah.
One of the things we remind, like that we have to remind people is that like, it is actually human behavior to judge others. Even though I'm a therapist, like sometimes there's initial judgment. I can't help that. I promise I will never condemn you. Mm. I might see you in a certain light. And because society affects all of this shit, right? It's all socially constructed. So I wouldn't say if there is a client that I'm not a fit for, I'm going to let them know. Mm. I'm not going to work with someone who's not a good fit
like
for me.
Like you'll break up with a patient?
Well, usually one, we tell everyone that they should therapist shop. So go try a few people, right? Just because, you know, Sally next door loved Joanne, the therapist, you might fucking hate Joanne. And so you have to find some way to say like, okay, how am I going to get to know this person? How am I going to see if it's a good fit? And if in the first session, I feel like it's not a good fit, I usually check in with someone and say like, how'd you think this went today? Like, did I feel like the right fit for you? Like, and if they say like, oh, I really liked it, I'm like, cool. Like, we'll try it again and like, see what's up. But we also believe in telling the truth.
So what? So have you had people say, you know what? I just don't think this is the right fit for me.
Yes.
Oh, and people ghost us too. There are
people who just, people ghost all the time.
You have to be very comfortable with rejection.
I could not ever do that. I still feel bad about last time saying like, oh, me and Jen are really vibing right now.
But you know what? It's part of it is we like just, you know, rant about how important it is to be connected with your therapist. And we understand that not everyone's going to feel connected to us and that we don't take that personally. That's actually part of the work, is to be able to say, this is not about me. And that's okay. Because if it's personal to us and we're like, oh my God, I can't believe you wouldn't like me, right? It becomes more about us than it does about the client.
Yeah, of course. But what a great gift to be able to have that as a human being, to just not personalize things. I mean, it I don't
changes,
know how to do that.
Changes
well, but
your
isn't
life.
That a thing? I'm not for everyone. I mean, truly, even for you both, do you think you're for everyone?
Okay, great question. We obviously are not for everyone.
Oh, you are definitely not for everyone.
Same right back at you, Sarah.
Maybe
right
a little more. Maybe
you know what? I actually like that you're showing the side of yourself to the therapists. Because sometimes you hide your bitchiness and today you're really like showing it. And I think it's good for them to see, you know?
I'm all me. This is me in the raw.
I think like, I know that I'm not for everyone, but it hurts my feelings when I'm not.
And why is that?
It just makes me, I think I've always been someone who really like, I want to like shapeshift into what I think that person will like. And sometimes I feel like I was better at it when I was younger and like single and free. And I would go into a room and I would just become whoever that person wanted me to be in a room. And I would feel that energy of like, charming someone and then being like, who's that girl? Like, she's so cool. She's so funny. She's so cute. I just like loved that feeling. Mm-hmm. And then as I get older and more like set in my ways, I'm not as good at it. And like, And sometimes I watch myself like do my shtick and I'm like, doesn't feel like it really landed for that person. Not sure if they really vibed with me. And I get embarrassed. I feel like Maybe I should have done this differently or that differently. Like, I've always felt like it's more important to me how that person feels than how I feel.
Well, you know, and it's just as we were talking about earlier, it's kind of a natural thing that we're socialized as women to do is gain acceptance through our relationships. And we, you know, as women, because we're socialized to do it, we become so good at it. And there's things that it can be really beneficial for, and then there's ways in which it can really hurt us, right? Like, you can probably go into a room and connect with the wall because you've gotten so good at it.
Yes.
And, you know, it's once again really helpful for making those connections. But when we derive our self-worth from it, that's where it can be really hard, because no matter what, in anything, we're bound to get rejected by someone.
Yeah. Every time I go, me and Simon, whenever we go to like a dinner party or a birthday or whatever, we get in the car and he'll be like, all right, so what are you going to spiral about tonight? What is it? What did you say? What did you do that you're going to spiral about? And we talk about how I always have a shame spiral. I always leave and I'm like, did that joke come across serious? Like, do you think that person felt like I was really meant that thing that I said? Or like, was I rude when I did that thing? Or did I not vibe with that? I'll get in my head about something.
And, like, I think we both,
Simon
like,
doesn't spiral.
I think we both go so out of our way to leave an impression. And sometimes You have to really, whatever that means, like we wanted to be seen as kids, you know, we really struggled to be seen as kids because our parents were divorced. Our dad had like a new household with other kids that we thought were getting more attention than us. We were like, you know, we felt like the step siblings and we were always, and I think in our adult life, like we want to be seen. And to be seen, sometimes you have to like say something crazy,
dance,
or do a dance or whatever it is. And I think our entire lives, we've never felt like we're enough. Mm-hmm. Right. So we go out of our way. I mean, that's just my interpretation. Maybe that's what Josh said. And maybe I'm stealing his interpretation, but I think I just came up with that.
I think it was amazing. You did really good. A+ for you today.
Perfect example of something that might have been really helpful for you growing up, right? In order to get attention or that recognition, you needed to be, you know, like make jokes or be out there in some way and really be very concerned with how people were responding to you in order to get that love and attention. That was like very important. And so it's something where something that worked for us as children, we bring into adulthood and keep using it and saying, okay, well, I really need to make sure that people like me or that I, you know, do something to get this attention so that it feeds me in some way. But as adults, to recognize, then you derive your self-worth based on other people's reactions of you. And then your self-worth is then out of your control because you're putting it in other people's hands to say, okay, I'm going to, you know, the way in which I'm going to feel good about myself is that this person reacts in this way. Right. And in the end, you have no control over that because you could say something, you could make a joke, you could have five different people listening to that joke, and they could have five different reactions. And those five different reactions are about how they're interpreting it, what's going on for them.
Yeah. I, you know, I don't want to speak for Erin, but it's like, I for sure, and I think her too, it is important what people think of us and are we liked and do people respect us and those things. But at the end of the day, and I think we touched on this in one of our other episodes, most people are pretty fucking selfish. They're thinking about themselves and how to, they're not thinking about us where we're like, oh
they're
my God.
Going home and having the same shame spiral
about their own shit where I'm yes. like, oh my God, does she hate me now? Is she thinking of this? She's not thinking about me.
But if we're honest, like you said, you know, before, we do judge each other. I know that I judge people. I'm not proud of it. And I know that people are judging me. So yes, people are mostly concerned with themselves, but like, don't you think that most people aren't willing to look at their own shit? So it's much easier to focus on other people, yes. to focus yes. on like you leave a dinner party. Maybe you're insecure about how you came across. So it feels good to get in the car and talk badly about somebody else. And so we are looking at each other. We are judging each other, you know, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I will say that the more you think other people are judging you is probably because you're judging yourself the most, right? Like, my therapist has said that to me before. I'm always like, well, I don't know. What if like they think this of me, if they think that of me? And they're like, well, she's like, well, do you think that of you? Mm-hmm. I do think that mm-hmm. of me. Okay.
And it brings up a great point of like, when we are highly critical towards others, we're often highly critical towards ourselves. So if you find that you often criticize your partner, your friends, your family, your children, it probably means you're also holding yourself to an unrealistically high standard. But there's a function out of all this, right? One of the ways that we have joined as women is gossip. It's something that we have, right? Like, you know, like there's that saying, like, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. The thing is that like this is
heard that saying.
Yes, yes. I like it. This is like actually a thing that women have done is like, okay, if I can connect with her talking about you, this is what we call as triangulation, right? I'm going to triangulate out and I'm going to actually express my anxiety onto this third party that doesn't have a choice here, right? And we can triangulate anything. We can have a dog in the room and talk to the dog.
I love triangulating my dog right? in my relationship. Like my favorite thing to do.
Right? You can have, right, maybe you see a family member, like, I guess we'll smoke some pot together. I can triangulate in weed. Like, there's anything you can do to diffuse tension because sometimes the tension of two is just too tight.
Don't you also think it's more enticing when like talking shit about somebody or whatever, when it's like you're triggered because you have the same qualities. So if you're like, she is the worst, she is such a star fucker. It's like all she wants to do is be friends. It's like, well, maybe all I want to do is be friends. Like, you know, right? Like you always kind of like, it's really fun to talk shit about the people that where you're like, oh, like I think I'm pretty much the same as her, right? Like why is that?
Projection.
Yeah.
That's what projection is, right? If I keep realizing, if I keep saying something to my partner, sometimes I'm like, am I talking to him or am I talking to me? Mm-hmm. Like, who am I actually talking to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's so true.
So a lot of people wanted us to dive into boundaries. And okay. I think we've covered, also I want to dive into this at some point if we have an extra 5 minutes. But did you see that statistic, and I might not get it right, that came out that 25% of couples have separate bedrooms.
What?
I thought it was higher than that.
I would say it was higher than that, too.
I'm actually surprised it's only
25%. The thing that surprises me,
I think it would be higher if people could afford that. Most people don't have a freaking spare guest room or a spare couch. Imagine if
that's true.
Think about how high the number would be if that was...
You have a note from Allison. Please be careful if you're chewing.
Oh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. She says it's annoying for listeners. Oh. I mean, fair enough. Who wants to hear somebody eat? It's very like ASMR, right?
Very. You could change the whole podcast into like an ASMR podcast if you want to.
Or I think you have to give a trigger warning at some point. Yeah, apparently, with chewing, we've heard that
trigger
before.
Trigger warning: burrito eating.
Burrito eating.
Delicious. I think. Sorry, does Sarah have a conversation?
Okay. Do you want to do boundaries? You want to do bedrooms?
Let's start with separate bedrooms.
Well, the first thing I would say is that it's, you know, I think it's so taboo for people to say, oh, you have separate bedrooms, you must be having trouble in your relationship. And that is not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm. Actually, historically, most people slept in separate bedrooms. This is not a new phase by any means. It's actually newer historically wise than 75% of people are sharing a room, and it probably is because of the poverty. Right. And so like this larger part of like, actually, this is what people have done throughout generations is have two separate beds.
And there's some people who might be listening to this who are like, oh, that actually does sound kind of nice. But the stigma around it that says, oh, if you have separate bedrooms, it must mean you're having trouble in your relationship, keeps people staying in the same bedroom, even if it doesn't work for them. Like, even if, you know, one person snores really loud and the other one's not getting sleep, like, just logistically, being able to sleep together is sometimes hard, and sleep is so necessary in order for us to function.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, if you stay at a ladies' dinner, we're in separate rooms, the gas.
Gasps, yep.
And then they go home to their husbands in the pillow talk, oh, my God, did you hear that Julie and Steve are in separate bedrooms?
It's the same thing we were just talking about. It feels good to go home and talk to your partner about how bad somebody else's marriage is.
To make yours look better.
Because it makes you feel better about the fight you guys had last week. It makes you feel better like to find out that not everyone else is living this perfect marriage. Yep.
And that's another example of triangulation, right? As opposed to saying to your partner, like, hey, we're really struggling right now. It's so much easier to be like, this couple's struggling. Let's talk about what they're going through. It's so much easier to have that conversation.
But wouldn't you say, like, there can never be one thing that defines a bad relationship or a bad marriage like staying in separate bedrooms, because maybe there's a couple that it totally works for them. I think, exactly. Like, it doesn't matter what the factors are, as long as you and your partner feel connected, you guys are physical to the degree that you want to be physical. There's a really funny scene. I thought about this last time we were talking about it. I think it's in Annie Hall, where Diane Keaton and Woody Allen are both asked separately. They're in a relationship, like, how many times a week or how often are you guys having sex, you know? And she goes, oh God, we have sex so much. We have sex 3 times a week. And then you go to him and he goes, do you think it's a bad thing? We only have sex 3 times a week. Like, it's not enough. And it's so accurate to how, like, a man thinks 3 times a week isn't enough and a woman thinks it's like so much. And so I think, like, if you are physical the amount that you both want to be. I mean, within reason, right? Like, for Simon, nothing's enough. And you feel connected to your partner and you both feel seen and heard, then, like, maybe the separate bedrooms are a sign of independence and it's okay. As long as those things aren't being used as tools to keep distance from each other.
Mm-hmm. There's a great rule that a lot of couples therapists talk about, which is fuck first, which is before you go out for the night, have you had sex, right? Because by the time you get back and you've had the drink and the kids wake up one time and all this stuff, I don't want to be intimate, right? So who are we to say what makes a good, happy, fulfilling marriage, right? For some of us, a few months ago, I got COVID and my partner didn't at the same time, right? So we slept in separate rooms so like he could like help out like with my daughter and stuff and be up. And honestly, it was lovely. It was like the first time I ended up getting the king and he got the queen. So I went out in that, but it was a really nice time.
Did you just
starfish the entire time, right? And there was nothing wrong with that situation. And it was a great little break. Why not redefine the rules of what works for your marriage?
Yeah.
If you wake up in a better mood. Let's say you like the AC roaring and you want your humidifier and you have like a whole certain, you need a pitch black. And what's the difference? If I wake up in a good mood and then go greet my partner, give them a kiss, excited to see them, as opposed to I roll up and I'm resentful and I'm like, get off of me and you're making me hot. Which is a better marriage?
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's like if you're happy together, it looks the way, I mean, everyone's so unique in what they want and need. Like, I don't think it's bad to be a couple that spend a lot of time apart. And then I also look at couples that they go, we haven't spent a night apart in 45 years or something. Yeah. And like, if it works for you, then it works for you, right? Like, we have to stop looking what everybody else is doing and just figure out, like, what works for us.
But think about all the women that have to, like, lay in bed and have, like, fucking sports center on till 1 a.m. when they want to be asleep by 9. Like, how do you live like that? But you're probably too afraid to say, like, look, I love you. I'm tired because I'm awake. And I don't want to deprive you of being in bed and watching your sports center till 1 a.m. You deserve that after your day. But for me, I can't sleep with it all. Like,
Simon and I had a really big fight like 6 months ago where we got in bed and I was like, okay, let's go to sleep. And he's like, I'm not ready to go to sleep. And I said, well, I want you to go to sleep because I'm going to sleep and I need to go to sleep when I go to sleep. And he's like, well, I don't want to. So I'm going to like play poker on my phone, on my iPad or my phone or whatever. And I was like, but I don't want you to because I need to know that you're going to sleep. And he goes, I will be silent. You won't hear me. I put my eye mask on. He's playing silent poker on his iPad. And literally 10 minutes later, I was like, I need you to go to sleep. I feel your awake energy. It's just like, you feel awake next to me. I know you're awake. And it just bothered me. He goes, you feel my awake energy? Like, that's not a thing. I was like, I just could feel that he was awake and I needed to go to sleep together. And we fight about it because he's like, this is unfair. I want to stay up. I'll be quiet. I'll be silent.
But you like, sound like a real nag. I think
no,
that's,
it's not that I'm a nag. It's just that I'm a little needy sometimes. Yeah. I like to like feel
control,
like
control.
We go to sleep cuddling together and I know we're, I don't know. It's just hard for me sometimes.
Oh wait, I didn't know you were a cuddler.
Yeah, we also,
whoa.
Yeah.
I'm not a cuddler. Don't touch me. Leave me alone.
It's a complaint of Simon's. I invade his space in the night.
So what would it be like to say to Simon, hey, could you hold me for a few minutes before you get on your phone? I'm going to be asleep actually pretty quickly and then you can get right back up and go to poker. But like, actually, like, I'm really trying to get security and softness from you right now. I think that sometimes, especially when we are outspoken women, sometimes it's hard for us to get nurturing and gentleness when maybe it's what we want.
Because so I just get mad. Like I get mad. I'm like, well, I can fucking feel that you're awake right now. And it's really annoying, which it's like the last thing he wants to do is cuddle with me after I've screamed and bit his head off.
Exactly. So is it that you want him to go to sleep with you or you want him to cuddle you?
I want him to cuddle me. I think there's something about like, I've gotten so used to sleeping with him that it feels really safe and comforting. Like he says this thing, like he says that, when we're sleeping and I'm like in the middle of the night, kind of tossing and turning a little bit, he's like, I'll literally will put my hand on your back and you'll start snoring. Just feeling his hand on my back. I'm not conscious. I don't know that this is happening, but he's like, it happens all the time. If I just see that you feel restless, I touch your back and you like fall asleep peacefully.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I don't know. There's just something very comforting for me.
Well, that's what's tough. And that's what we talk to couples about all the time. I mean, we struggle with this in our own relationships too. Like we're not perfect. But to be able to say like, that actually sounds like what's more important to you is just getting the physical touch before mm-hmm. you go to sleep as opposed to him having to go to sleep.
Yes, that's true. I should probably just not take it that extra step where I act really controlling and demand he be unconscious with me.
Then your needs don't get met.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, like I, when I go to a place of like, this is something I need to feel safe. That's a real like soft spot for Simon. And so he'll sacrifice what he wants or needs because he loves being that person that makes me feel safe. And so we fill those roles. But when I have that edge or it comes out angry, it's obviously much harder for him to like, to want to do it, you know? And I only know, like we grew up in a way where like the only way that any issue was solved was through an argument. Like it was always yelling. It was always snapping at someone. It was always being in trouble. There was never like these evolved,
open conversations.
Peaceful conversations of like, hey, dad, this thing that you did like kind of hurt my feelings and made me upset. Oh shit, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. Like, let's talk it out. It was like you have to pick a fight or like scream and yell and get mad to be heard or to be seen.
And picking a fight meant potentially not speaking for a long time.
Yeah, everything had to be really dramatic. And it's been so hard for me. Like Simon grew up in a house where he's truly in his life never heard his mom yell before. He's never heard her raise her voice. Like that is just not the house that he grew up in. So for him, it's like traumatic when I like you know, light a match and burn the house down over one fight. And I'm just like ready to go. And he's like, this is terrifying. Right. Whatever like, you're is doing psychotic. Is so terrifying. And like, it really is unsettling for him. And like, when I storm out of a room, he's like, that's so disrespectful. How dare you? Do not leave this room. And I'm like, Simon, this is what you do in a fight. I storm out of the room.
You come after
I slam the door. You open the door and come after me. You force me to sit with you and talk to you. And he's like, oh my God, that's not what you're supposed to do.
Well, you know what? And pretty much what's happening in those moments is there's more vulnerable feelings underneath that reaction that's coming up for you.
Always.
It feels so much safer for us to have that reaction, whether it is yelling or getting in arguments or shutting down, right? Like we go into these protective mechanisms because being vulnerable in those moments is terrifying.
Terrifying.
Right? To be able to say, oh, you know, I just want to feel safe. I want to be held. I want to be cuddled. Puts you at risk of him saying like, no, I want to play poker on my phone. Mm-hmm. How much more rejecting does that feel than if you were to say, can you just go to sleep with me? And he would say, no, I play poker on my phone. You're protecting yourself by going into that kind of frustrated, angry stance. So that's the reasons why we do those things. But it's a barrier to connection and communication and actually getting those needs met.
Yes, it's so true. You guys are, now I'm just like getting a personal therapy session. So I appreciate, I apologize for that.
AG Greens, I'll just talk about you all the time. New Zealand-based company, we trust it, we love it. Everything coming out of there is just the right ingredients. It just works. I'm a person who takes, I'm like a real supplement person. There's a lot of, I'm lacking in a lot of areas.
You really are.
I'm low in everything.
Emotionally.
I'm low in everything.
Financially.
Everything.
Soulfully.
And it got to the point where I was having like acid reflux because I was taking so many supplements. Athletic Greens has come into my life. Yes, this is an ad, but I am all in on Athletic Greens. It's basically a powder. I'm not even reading from the thing. It's a powder. And in this powder contains... In this powder contains
her eyes are closed.
Everything you need. I believe it's something like 75.
Doesn't have a rich husband in it.
What?
Doesn't have a rich husband in it.
My eyes are closed.
You said everything you need is in this one scoop.
I am saying this from the heart.
Well, I am very impressed with it. I really also enjoy it. And you know that I quit drinking coffee a while ago because putting acid in your stomach first thing in the morning is no bueno. And so
you got to put this in your stomach first and then I put the acid in. So I do all, no, I can't, sorry, I'm never quitting coffee. So I do this, I wake up, I do this, and then I have my coffee.
Because in one scoop of AG1, it contains 75 vitamins, minerals.
I said all this.
No, you didn't say all of it. 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, green superfood blend, and more in one convenient daily serving. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/foster today. Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/foster to take control of your health and give AG1 a try. Okay, we are very into CBD products, and Onyx and Rose is a really great one. I really like their Bliss Balm. It's like a really nice balm that I put it on my cuticles, although I think it's supposed to be for like joint pain, but CBD is really, can be used for anything.
CBD is a space we're very interested in. Onyx and Rose is a brand that has come to our attention that we really like. The sleep gummies specifically are...
You're into the sleep gummies.
Well, I just really have a hard time sleeping.
Yeah, me
and
too.
I'm really trying to stay away from drugs, you know, from bad, you know, the chemicals that just knock you out. And CBD is just like a complete game changer.
Yeah, and Onyx and Rose has very high quality, so it's very trusted.
Well, it's CBD. A premium. It's premium, you know.
Yeah, and it helps with your anxiety and inflammation. And they have this great CBD oil that you can use every night. It's really nice.
Yeah, no, I think CBD, it just tackles so many of the things that we deal with. Sleep problems, anxiety, you know, when your joints are hurting, you rub the CBD, you rub the balm on it and it helps. I mean, it truly and deals with inflammation.
It smells really good. It's really clean. It feels very fresh. They have these oil tinctures that come in these really like delicious smelling flavors, sugar cookie, chocolate, coconut, and mint. And it's very unexpected.
We're just discovering, too, that CBD just has so many benefits to it. The skincare line is fantastic. It was sent to us recently. It's just, it's pretty impressive, this company.
Yeah, we really love it. So trust us, Onyx and Rose will be the highlight of your daily routine. We have an awesome deal to get you started. 20% off your first purchase.
Oh my gosh, 20% off, you guys. Let's go.
Very good.
Get these, start with these sleep gummies.
Just go to onyxandrose.com/foster and use the promo code FOSTER. The deal is not available anywhere else, so go get 20% off with the promo code FOSTER at onyxandrose.com/foster.
Guys, it's all connected back. We learned this. This is learned behavior. Like, we as children, I think for us, it was a sign of love if our mom or dad came after us, came running after us. And honestly, a lot of the time, like, they didn't. You know, I think our mom did more than our dad, but a lot of the time they didn't, right? So, because we lived separately and it wasn't as, it was, you know, you're at a restaurant because you don't live together. You meet out at a restaurant, there's a fight, you leave, and then it's like, you don't see each other again until the next weekend that you get to see each other.
You had to cause a scene kind of sometimes to be heard. And it doesn't work in a mature adult relationship. Like, I don't want to be an adult causing a scene. And sometimes when I talk to my therapist about, like, behavior that I display, she, when I say, like, well, I don't know, it's just so annoying when Simon pays attention to this person, you know? I don't like that he talks to that person so much. And, like, and she's like, okay, how old do you feel right now with that feeling? And I'm like, feel definitely like 6, probably.
But you know what?
This isn't the most mature feeling I've ever had.
But you know what? And we've talked about this. You don't give a, he pays so much attention to me. We're so close and it does not trigger you because I'm such an extension of you. I'm your full blood, allegedly, full blood sister, right? And so that feels okay. But we grew up always fighting for our place, right? And having to share our circle with other people because we had step siblings. So we were always forced to share. And you're not supposed to be forced to share as a kid.
Well, you're like, not supposed to share your parents.
You're not supposed to share your parents with other people's kids.
Well, and it's interesting because you guys earlier talked about there was two different things that happened in your childhood. One was if you were the hilarious, kind, wonderful performers, there was attention. And then if you had a complete fucking meltdown, there was attention, right? So either way, it's a performance. Either way, it's I have to be somebody else. And that's where the conditions lie. And so sometimes it's actually very hard to then stop and walk away from that performance to say something like, hey, I'd actually really like you to just rub my back.
Oh, my God.
Because that didn't actually get me anything growing up. It wasn't big enough or good enough to get that attention that I needed in childhood. And so it's hard to then do that in adulthood.
Yeah, that's true.
That's so true.
Did that bond to you guys at all? Just being in the kind of that same position?
Did it bond us?
Well, I didn't figure any of this shit out until recently.
Sarah wasn't available for bonding.
No,
the truth.
But hold on. That's a whole other thing. I didn't start therapy or even understanding the connection between my behavior as an adult and my childhood. It's so freeing now that I have some sort of understanding as to, like, the correlation and why I genuinely 3 years ago was like, why do I do this? It makes no sense. Like, I felt like I was going crazy. And now I go, oh, I get it. That's why I act like this. That's why these things trigger me. That's why I'm so crazy about this because of that. When I was a kid and I wasn't getting this or I was getting too much of that, right? Like, so I didn't even really understand. So yeah, I mean, Erin and I probably missed out on tons of bonding because she has been working on herself for so long and I just started. So it's all new, but this really just like dovetails to what we started talking about in the beginning, which is asking for what you need, advocating for yourself, even like the separate bedroom things, like for women to be able to say like, this is what I need. This is what's better for me and not being afraid to do so. So it's really all like tied in to that first sort of thing.
And into boundaries.
And it's right? And into boundaries.
And this great is segue. What leads us great into, segue. Do I have rigid boundaries? Do I have diffuse boundaries? Or do we have what's also called rubber fence boundaries, where it looks like they're adaptable and they're flexible, but actually they're not, and I'm going to rubber fence you right out of here.
But isn't it better to have like strict boundaries than bad boundaries?
What are boundaries? Well, let's just start with that. Okay. What are boundaries? Like, really?
So boundaries is where I'm able to say where you stop and I begin, right? So boundaries is where I can love you and me simultaneously at the same time at the same amount, right? So I don't put boundaries up with Jen to hurt her or reject her. I'm putting up boundaries up to actually stay collaborating with myself and in love with myself. And so when you say this thing is like, is it better to have strict? Well, it depends. A lot of people actually have incredibly rigid boundaries and have a lot of inflexibility, which also makes them feel quite lonely. And it's done as a self-protective method. Either way, right? Maybe I have like no boundaries at all. I say yes to everything. I'm overly nice. I'm
super walk all over me.
Right, doormat. And so that's going to probably pull a lot of relationships in, but not make me feel very good. As opposed to having incredibly rigid boundaries, I'm going to push people away, but maybe I feel a little bit more comfortable. But either way, where's the flexibility and adaptability? How do I function in a relationship? How does life change and happen?
How do you set boundaries with like a companion or a parent who just refuses to work on themselves? Like you're in this relationship, you're not going to like dump your parent or your wife or husband or whatever, but like they're refusing to sort of like evolve and see the problems. What do you do? How do you create boundaries with that type?
So that's what can be really tough is that just because other people are unwilling to look at themselves or make changes with themselves, you get the choice to still stick to your boundaries and say, okay, listen, just because maybe they're unwilling to work with, you know, what they have going on, I can still say, what do I need for myself? How do I take care of myself? And also hold them accountable in a loving way. Right? I think so often, you know, we build resentment in our relationships, and the way in which we try to set boundaries is we're very reactive and we think, oh, that's a boundary if I freak out at them or yell at them. When really we can say, hey, listen, I love you. I very much appreciate you and I love our relationship. However, these are the things that I'm unwilling to tolerate, or these are the things that are really challenging for me in our relationship. And this would be really helpful for me, right? And so I think so often we either, you know, if we have diffuse boundaries where, you know, our partners are walking all over us or it's different relationships, that we hold in our feelings about it or, you know, we're not considering our own feelings and what's happening for us. And so it all boils over and we end up reacting, and that's what we feel like, oh, that's what a boundary is. I think that's what gets confusing for people is they think a boundary is like reacting or cutting people off in some way, when really setting a boundary can be really healthy and it's done through communication and to be able to say like, hey, listen, I love you, I appreciate you, but this is what I won't tolerate in this relationship.
And are boundaries like a critical thing in every relationship between parent and child, coworker, employee, right? Like, okay, so every relationship, it's critical.
The unpopular thing to say is the fact is that, like, we talk a lot about unconditional love, but, like, relationships have conditions and they should have conditions. If my employee's stealing from me, that's probably going to be a condition in our relationship. If my partner is physically abusing me, I'm going to need to set a boundary in that relationship, right? Relationships should have conditions. The one thing we talk about is unconditional love is you can have unconditional love. I can love you at every point where you're at your lowest point and your best point. When you are losing your goddamn mind, going crazy train, I can love you just as fiercely and compassionately as your best, most performance self. But I'm also within that love able to set conditions. The place that it stops is when you then, right, you can lose your mind and be upset here and have everything going on. But if you then go smash every piece of electronics that I have, maybe there's a condition on that. Mm-hmm. And we're allowed to sit here and say, what are conditions in this relationship?
But I don't think parent-child should be conditional, right?
That is the
That's
one
our one
place.
We talk about.
Okay, because my kid, and I've said this to our parents before, I'm like, as a parent, my kid could do anything. I will never not love the shit out of her. I will never not fucking have her back and be in her corner. She could tell me to go fuck myself. She could punch me in the face. That would be super dark and upsetting, and we'd have to deal with that. But I would not, it wouldn't change how I feel about her for 1 second. And I've said that to our parents in fights. I've been like, this isn't how it's supposed to be. Like, I can do no wrong. Like, you could be upset or this, but like, it should never change our relationship because yes. you're the parent and it doesn't matter how old I am, I'm your child.
That mm-hmm. and that is the one place where conditions aren't healthy in those relationships.
And this is when we
not
get to the difference
healthy,
between,
exactly.
Right? And this is where we get to the difference of unconditional but also boundaries, right? I can have unconditional love for my child, right? And still, my child comes home and tells me that they just committed murder. What do I do with that?
Well, you're going to turn them in probably, right?
Yeah. But don't you think that, like, especially for adult children, like, the parent can love you regardless of anything. I mean, they'll stand in front of a bus for you.
Yep.
They will still visit you in prison if you killed someone, whatever it is. But if you are a toxic or a difficult or a negative or a problematic person constantly creating stress. Hold on.
I know where you're going with this.
No.
And the answer is no.
It's not that they stop loving you, but they also are allowed to have a boundary and say, this is not productive in my life. I don't enjoy this
energy.
No,
you don't say to your child, this isn't productive in my life. You say, I love you so much and I'm never going anywhere. Can we figure out why this is toxic? Why are you treating me like this? Like, it's hurting me. You do not go to your child as a kid or an adult saying, this is not productive for me, this relationship. That's actually horrible.
Well, let's see
I guess it gets into what we start talking about is like enabling behavior, right? Like, let's say that you had a child who struggled with addiction, right? And you have gone through everything with them. You have helped them get in places, right? Like, there are some times where people would be like, okay, I have to now set a boundary and stop enabling the behavior, right? So maybe that would mean not giving you access to cash or something, right? So that's what I mean. Like, you can start putting up these boundaries for what feels right. It does not mean love ever goes away. We need to be loved at our very worst, at our darkest, deepest
you
moments.
Never don't show up for your kids. I'm sorry. I don't care if your kid is 5 or your kid is 50. You never, it is just.
I know, I'm just saying, like, I don't think that any human being is supposed to have a limitless amount of patience and understanding for everybody else. Like,
wrong.
I think
for your kid, you do.
I don't think
But actually, having boundaries is what allows us to have it limitless. If I'm able to set a boundary of, hey, this has been really hard, I'm going to take a break from you for the weekend so I can take care of myself, and then I'm going to come visit you on Monday in rehab or jail. You know what I mean? Like, whatever we're talking about, right? So actually, boundaries allow us to always maintain that love. Yeah. If I burn myself out and I have no boundaries, I'm actually going to have so much resentment, and resentment kills intimacy. And we have intimacy in all relationships, not just romantic ones, but also in parent-child ones.
And that's where I think boundaries and unconditional love get confused or misconstrued in some way. And we always talk about this as therapists too. You have to be able to take care of yourself before you can take care of anyone else. And we know that as therapists because we make it a point to say we have to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of our clients, so that we can be there for our relationships. But boundaries are so important so that we can take care of ourselves first, because without that, you do get resentful and you can't have the same relationship and connection that you would have otherwise.
So let's say your toddler's having a meltdown. It is not bad or hurtful to them to say, okay, I find that I'm about to start yelling at you and I also like feel like I'm about to flip my lid. So I'm going to walk into the other room. I'm going to take some deep breaths. I'm going to regain my composure so I can walk back out to my child and love them and hold them, right? Taking a break is very good for relationships. It doesn't mean abandonment. It doesn't mean rejection. It means, hold on, I'm going to go regain my composure, pull myself together so I can best be here with you.
I am such a fan of Osea that I have recently decided it's going to be my daughter's birthday gift. She doesn't listen to this podcast, so it's not giving anything away. I'm so obsessed with the ingredients, with the products, that this is going to be the first skincare line that I'm okay with her using fully. Like, there isn't anything in the line that I'm not okay with her using.
I am obsessed
We're
with
both
Osea.
Yeah, we both are.
Like a crazy person, yeah. And I bathe myself, like, I've been so dry lately, and I've bathed myself in their advanced protection cream. It's like a heavy cream that literally you lay it on your face and it makes you feel like you'll never be dry again.
It also
it is
just
the most
makes
moisturizing.
Like, lines look like they're not there anymore.
Yes, it just feels so creamy. And I'm also lately needing to use a body oil because I'm feeling very dry. And so
it's very dry in California right now.
And it's the cold months have begun.
Yeah.
You know, winter is coming. By the way, guess what mom told me when I posted them the other day? That the founders of Osea lived on our street in Malibu.
Where have you been? We've discussed this.
You have said that
previous
before?
Previous ads, yes.
All of their products are clean, vegan, cruelty-free, climate neutral, created with sustainable sourced seaweed, and made in California. So you can feel good about everything that you're putting on your skin. Love that. So experience your new favorite clean skincare line with a special discount just for our listeners. You get 10% off your first order with the promo code FIRST. FIRST at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every single order, and orders over $50 get free shipping. You're going to want literally everything.
You guys,
buy
the entire line. I don't say that a lot. Buy the, there's,
I'm not done with the call to action.
Buy the entire line.
Not done with the call to action.
But if you can't start with,
go to OseaMalibu.com. That is OseaMalibu.com and use the code FIRST.
Bull and Branch, I really do feel like at this point we should have some sort of ownership in this company. We talk about it all the time. We tell all our friends about it. We now have talked about it on almost every episode of the podcast. These sheets, the bedding, are on every bed in my house. They're now in every bed in Aaron's house. For Christmas, people will be getting their Bull and Branch. I am all in on organic bedding. I feel better in them. I wake up feeling better. They're like buttery soft.
I have to say,
it's like sleeping in heaven.
I've had a lot of friends text me saying, hey, what's your Bull and Branch code?
All the time.
Because they hear us talk about it so much.
All the time.
And people are really all about it.
Yeah, because who wants to sleep in chemicals?
Great question.
No, I'm
I
just
don't.
Saying, like, who wants to, especially if you're a naked sleeper?
Oh, are you a naked sleeper?
You'll never know.
Well, I mean, you brought it up, so.
I know, I regret it. This company was founded in 2014 by a husband and wife, which I love, Scott and Missy.
Oh, Scott and Missy.
Scott and Missy together.
That's so cute.
Husband and wife.
We love Bull and Branch.
And family-owned business, you know. They're also like do great things. They're pledging to double the U.S. assembly jobs this year. I mean, this company's growing rapidly. I feel like, yeah. I don't know. My mission is to have everyone sleeping in Bull and Branch by 2023.
I like that mission. Yeah. And you guys should know that Bull and Branch is made to a higher standard with toxin-free processes, fair trade certification to ensure workers are paid fair living wages. These people are doing it right.
Just get the sheets for your kids.
So to experience the best sheets you have ever felt, choose Bull and Branch. You can try them worry-free for 30 nights with free shipping and returns. And our listeners get an exclusive 15% off the first set of sheets with the promo code FOSTER15 at bowlandbranch.com. That is bowl and branch, B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code FOSTER15.
I have a confession. I did something I like really failed as a parent this morning. My 5-year-old is, and we don't have to like, because we're more talking about like adult relationships, and I think a lot of our
classic Sarah. I'm going to tell you this thing, but don't go deep with me about it, okay?
No. But it just it. I wish that I had to utilize that tool of like, you know, listen.
All right, take us through it. Through it.
So my 5-year-old is having not issues, but like she's a quirky little girl. She's quirky. She's the most incredible, like, I can't even begin. But she will only wear, like, 2 articles of clothing. Like, you don't understand. She will dig through the dirty clothes, and it doesn't matter if there's orange juice spilled all over it. She has to wear it to school, okay? And I'm like, Josie, there's chocolate. I have to have it. She'll only wear white. She'll only wear this one sweater. So this morning, I was shocked. She got dressed because she knows that it's like upset me. And she got dressed and she put a different sweater on. And I like could have cried. I was like, oh my God, okay. She's not digging through the dirty clothes. Like she put this different sweater on and I was so happy. And she knew it. I was like, oh my God, Josie, you look so great. Like who the fuck cares? Let her wear what she wants. But I was happy. And I'm like, you can't wear the same thing every day to school. And I was so happy. She came down the stairs and had taken it off and had the dirty sweater on again. And I fucking lost it. And I go, what is wrong with you? And I like, I literally lost it. I literally said to her, what is wrong with you? Because I had so just had it up to my, but really, I should have been like totally coming at it from a different.
What is this deep need in her?
What is this deep need in you? But I didn't have it in me to relate to her on that level because I was triggered. It triggered me. And I'm sure I was like, they're going to think you have no money. They're going to think you can't afford another sweater. They're going to think you're dirty.
Or like Sarah's kid is dirty. Sarah's kid wears the same thing every day.
It was about me. Like, who
gives a shit what she wears? But like, they're going to think I don't dress you. They're going to think I'm a bad mom.
You're not cute. You don't look cute at school.
Yeah, like I don't do laundry. They're going to, I don't know, but it was about me. And I fully shame spiraled about it. I emailed the teacher. I was like, is Josie okay this morning? They're like, yeah, she's great. But like, it was really like a dark moment as a parent. And she cried and it was really, really bad. And I
wish.
Which
sweater did she wear to school?
That fucking one with the pearls. Okay. It's the Zara sweater.
Oh, she wore that last night with me.
Of course she did.
Honestly, it's a very cute sweater.
She wears it every single day. But I don't know where we're going with this, but it's just really hard in those moments to communicate the way you're telling me to communicate. Yeah.
Well, also, let me first say the fact that you can just recognize that now and say, oh, that was about me, means that you can take that into future interactions with her. Mm-hmm. Some people don't even recognize that it's about them.
Well, I didn't recognize it until a couple hours later. In the moment, it was all about her and why is she doing this? Why is she doing this? This makes no sense. Yeah. You have a closet filled with beautiful clothes. What is wrong with you? Mm. I mean, she's five. It's pretty sad.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with her. But in that moment, actually, what you were feeling is what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
That I can't get it to be different. What's wrong with my mothering? What's wrong with how I've raised her? I have failed this child, right?
Completely.
And so, first of all, thank you for saying that because I don't think you realize how many moms need to hear that story for them to feel like, you want to know what? I've done that on my kid and that was so unfair, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah. I
think it's important for us to say, like,
because I'm frustrated.
Because we're all just trying
and
our very
human.
Best. And you're human, right? And so in that moment, probably also one of the things was because you celebrated the first time, and next time just ignore when she wears the different sweater.
Oh, don't even mention it.
You gave too much positive reinforcement and put too much pressure
on
it.
And just let her wear the dirty sweater every day?
No, but so when she first put on the other sweater, you celebrated it, right?
Yeah. I did.
Too much pressure.
And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, taking it off.
Too much pressure.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. You should have just ignored the other sweater, said nothing.
And so,
But what you try to do is what most of us try to do as parents is go full positive reinforcement, right? Oh my God, positive, 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 because it's going to stick. Honestly, positive reinforcement puts a ton of pressure on kids, right? Because then it says is like, I don't actually like this sweater. I don't want to be in it. Now I'm highly aware of this sweater and I got to take this thing off. Like sensory, I'm starting, something's coming up. I got to put on my other sweater.
Right.
And I also think, don't you think
there's such like bizarre things that feel comforting to kids? There are things that are just familiar. I remember having the same thing as a kid. Like when you have stresses in your life, your parents have stresses in your life, like every household has their own shit going on, right? So yeah. Josie has her own issues and her own stresses and her own anxieties the same way like when I was a kid, I had my own. And there was sometimes like a piece of clothing just made me feel safe and it made me feel comfortable and it made me go like, I like the way this feels on me. I like the way I look in it. And I just want to feel that exact same way every single day. And I don't care if people think that it's repetitive. Like kids have these weird things that they grab onto to just feel good.
Yeah.
But it's hard because as parents and as partners and of everything we're talking about is like we have experienced so much judgment that it feels like it's a direct extension about us. If my child shows up again in the dirty shirt, everyone thinks I'm a bad mom, right? We get very attached to this, right? And what Josie really needs to hear when she comes home is, I want to let you know that if you wear that sweater the rest of your life, I'm going to love you so damn hard for every second of every minute.
Oh my
and so
God,
today,
I need to say that. I hate that sweater. I want to freaking cut it up into 1,000 pieces, but you're right. I have to say that. It kills me.
And also, it might make it that the sweater has less power.
And you very much expressed that too, right? You said if your child were to like murder someone, you're still going to love them no matter what.
Yeah.
So even though you hate the sweater, it doesn't take away from
the love
the fact
for her.
That you love her.
Yeah.
Also, I think that maybe like when you think of it, when you look at scenarios like that, it could give you more compassion for parents. Like if it's easy to be selfish with your five-year-old, it's also easy to be selfish with your 35-year-old, right? Like parents are people. We're all dealing with our own shit. And so sometimes this idea of like being the kid gives you license to always be right and always be loved and always be cherished. Like we're all just people. I mean, when I converted to Judaism, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but there's this like thing in Judaism that like really bothered me. It said, always honor your parents. And I was like really triggered by that. And it kind of made me think about like when I watched Indian matchmaking. Did you watch the show, Indian matchmaking?
I saw, like, I think I saw like one episode.
So it really triggered me also because these parents make their children marry who they want them to be with, not who they want to be with themselves. Mm-hmm. And this idea of like living for your parents instead of living for yourself, like, always just really bothered me. And we were really lucky that we actually had parents who like let us be extremely independent. None of the choices that we made in our lives did they paint as a reflection of them. Like when I was 16 or when I was 15, I wanted to go to boarding school in Switzerland.
Right.
Was,
no questions asked. They were like, if that's what you want to do, yeah, like, I'll make it happen for you.
It was never about like, how does this affect us? My mom was like, you know, her friends would say to her, how could you let your 15-year-old like live in Switzerland? Like, why wouldn't you make her stay home? And my mom was like, well, of course it's hard for me that she's across the world, but it's better for her. If she's going to have an experience that changes who she is as a person, if she's going to get to have that life experience at 15 to shape herself in a more well-rounded way, why would I stand in the way of that? It's not about me. It's about her experience.
And dad never asked questions. Dad was never like, why don't you look at another school or how much is it? He was just like,
our parents, when we decided not to go to college, they never looked at it as like, how does this affect us? It was always like, you need to go off and be the person that you're going to be, even when you make mistakes, even if you're not to the place I want you to be at. Like, it's your life to live. And I am really grateful for that. I married someone Jewish. That is not how Jewish parents roll, okay?
By the way, not how I roll. I want my kids to live with me. I want them to all go to UCLA. I mean, they'll never get in, but like, that's my dream.
But the Jewish way in general to stereotype, and now that I'm Jewish, I can stereotype them as much as I want.
I'm also Jewish, yeah, and my, I can.
Same. Jewish mother, she lives right 4 houses down.
It's all about like, how does this affect me as a parent?
Yes.
What you're doing as an adult or as a child. And it was such a hard concept for me to understand. And so when I was converting, you know, because when I met my husband, I was 35. When we got married, I was 37. I'm a fully formed person and I've been raised in this independent way where I don't have to check in with anybody. If I decided to move to Switzerland again tomorrow,
we'd all be fine.
Everybody would be like, I'm happy for you. You know, it wouldn't be like, how does this affect me? And so I'm really triggered when I see parents who are like, well, I didn't want them to go to college because I don't want them to be far away from me. And like, I didn't want them to do that job because it'd be hard for me. And so when I talked to the rabbi about this concept, he was like, I think you're misunderstanding what the concept of honor your parents is. It doesn't mean do everything your parents want you to do. It means your parents can be assholes. Your parents can be awful. Like, that's on them. You don't bring shame on your family as yourself. That means like, you live in an honorable way so that you don't bring shame to them. But that doesn't mean you have to do what they want you to do. You are responsible for yourself.
The thing that comes to my mind is something we call intergenerational transmission process, right? So what happens is if your parents had to live for their parents when they have children, if that's their internalized idea of like, this is your relationship, this is the type of relationship you have with your kids, then it gets passed down unless you do the work to make the change. And so, you know, it's very common in different cultures that you do what your parents expect of you to make sure that they're happy because that's what they did for their parents. And it just keeps getting passed down generations.
All right. Well, I feel like I don't know.
You guys, we once again didn't even cover the document.
Well, listen, you know what? We use them as thought starters, but it's a conversation.
Don't we have like a rapid fire?
All I see here is, why does intimacy die over time? I mean, these conversations are huge. Narcissistic huge. Parent, what do we do? Is therapy more accessible in the U.S.? It's so hard in the U.K.
How young is it to start therapy? Never too young.
How young is too young?
Never too young. Start with play therapy at 3 years old.
Maybe we can do a little rapid fire. I mean, these are big questions.
Rapid fire,
These are big questions. But how young is too young to start therapy?
I would say under three.
Yeah.
Okay, I started right at three.
Play therapy and sand tray therapy, they'll start around 3 years old.
I remember being like 4 in therapy and like picking out the feeling pocket, you know, like, which feelings do you have today? And every time I was like angry, ooh, mad.
So. Guys, what's your favorite part about being a therapist?
Humans.
Truly getting to hear people's like vulnerable stories. We honestly, I can speak to myself, I know you feel this way too, but like, feel so honored that people open up to us in that way. It just feels really incredible. And it also—
Okay, this is rapid fire, but keep going.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Normalize the
experience. Okay, what? No, I want to get all the questions
so
into them.
Rude.
Okay,
that's fair.
I love you guys. We're friends.
It's okay.
If I didn't feel comfortable with you, I would have never said
that. Good news, Sarah. Everything that you do is being clocked. They are therapists. Okay, I have, this is a question that I'm very curious about. The question is
rapid.
doesn't mean you have to speak fast, Sarah. Oh, okay. How long is too long to stay with one therapist? And this is the question. It's kind of like a never-ending thing. Like, when do you know to take a break?
It's not about how long is too long, but if you are staying past feeling like there's fulfillment and success in it, right? Just like any relationship, just because you've invested a lot of time of it, sometimes we outgrow it. So it's all about, where am I at? Am I over it? Don't stay if it's not working.
Also, talk to your therapist about it if you feel that way.
Three ways to help with anxiety.
Grounding skills, coping skills, self-soothing, be in nature.
You guys are good at this.
Be in nature is such an important one that we forget.
Oh, right. Like grounding. A naked.
Psychedelics.
Psychedelics. Yeah.
Psychedelics.
Have you ever broken? Oh, you already asked that. I did hear that part.
You're literally like on Jeopardy right now. You don't need to rush
I know.
So much.
I'm sorry because.
Okay. What's the best way to encourage a loved one to go to therapy?
Ooh.
I love you so much. I would like you to work on yourself. I'd like you to go to therapy. And if you're worried about starting, how about if I come with you?
I was just going to say, frame it as couples therapy. If they have a really hard time going individual, if you say, let's go together, it can be really helpful to make it less intimidating.
I want this for us, not just for you.
Let's work on this together.
When is it appropriate? Like, how long into a relationship to say, let's go to couples therapy? Like, you can't say that on day one. Like, when is it first date?
No, especially if you're blending families, start at the beginning. I mean, like,
appropriate on the first date?
That was a joke. No, okay. Not on the first date.
If you were talking about kids involved and we're blending a family, as soon as you are meeting the children, let's have a plan. Let's think about kids first. So if you're in a relationship and you were saying, hey, this shit really works, but we got some stuff we got to figure out, I like to say around 6 months.
How do you deal with a friend or family member gaslighting you?
Setting up boundaries, figuring out and being able to identify the
holding them accountable. Also, you going to therapy to help validate what you're experiencing, because that can be really hard. It's very manipulative. Mm-hmm. And if it's just the two of you being isolated, if you go to therapy, have this conversation to really figure it out so that you feel grounded in what reality is.
This is a good question. How hard should relationships be?
Okay, I'm going to say it really quickly. It's really hard.
That's not rapid. But by the way, doesn't it depend?
Some people have clear-cut black lady.
The thing that I was going to say is I want to just debunk the myth that if it's right, it should be easy. Because relationships in general are difficult. And it's okay that it's difficult. It doesn't mean it's not right. And I think that fucks us up a little bit to think that, oh, because it's hard means it's not right. Relationships in general are hard.
Yeah. By the way, the relationships that I have that are easy and like they're just kind of surface, like for me at least, like of course they're easy. Like we're not really going below the surface, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I could talk to you guys forever.
I know, me too. Let's just move in together, all of us, four of us.
Deal. Bye. We've been looking for roommates,
living communities.
Okay, I want to end it with this.
Oh.
How do you keep romance alive?
Oh, that's a big one.
When you got kids and it's like many years in, and I mean, this person, my husband.
Big quotations around person, huh?
Someone said, how do you keep the romance alive with the chaos of life and kids?
Compassionate curiosity.
Curiosity.
I want to know you. I want to see you.
Wow, that's very good advice.
That is really good.
My answer would be very long, and I just am going to stay quiet.
Guys, we really, 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 really love you.
You guys are fantastic. And I just want to say to anyone listening, call this group. Call the Shrink Chicks. Set up an appointment.
The therapy group.
Get your shit together. Just try one. Like, even if you have a therapist, like, you think you kind of like, but, like, you're not quite sure, give it a chance. Because I'm not just saying this to you guys. Like, you have your shit together. And you just lay it out straight. And you really just have simple, attainable tips and advice on how to just feel a little bit better in this fucked up world that's really hard.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
We are honored. If you are in the Northeast area, specifically Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, New Jersey, a whole bunch of other places, we have lots of clinicians your way. If you are a clinician or interested in joining the therapy group, you could always reach out to us directly.
We're always hiring across the U.S.
We have an amazing group of really awesome, down-to-earth, tell-it-as-it-is clinicians. This is how we believe that lives can change.
Well, Erin always says that her calling, if she wasn't a comedy writer, would have been being a therapist. So maybe you can just quickly, like,
join us.
Let's do it.
Well, me and my girlfriend, Sophia, we were talking about how it seems like such an amazing, like, second chapter of your life when you're a little older and you're like 60 and you settle into like being a therapist and you like, you know, see patients three times a week and your brain is stimulated and like you create your own hours. But you know, you have to go to a lot of school for that. So it's not like I could just decide.
You should start now. And you'll be good by your 60.
It's such a fulfilling career.
Yeah.
It is so fulfilling. So highly recommend when you're ready.
Yeah, I love the idea of that. Well, I'm excited to just keep talking to you guys because I want you to be, guys. No diss to Barbara because I love my therapist, but you know, getting a little injection of new energy is also really exciting. It feels good.
I think you should have three therapists. Barbara, your couple's therapist, and now them.
Yeah, I don't
Perfect.
Think that's
too
much
there you
at
go.
All.
No.
Thank you guys so much.
If you like this podcast, leave a rating and review.
This podcast is executive produced by...
Can you not use that voice?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to sound...
Yeah, but you don't need to make it sexy.
This podcast is executive produced by...
Do you have a normal voice?
Yeah. Aaron Foster, Sarah Foster, and Allison Bresnick.
Okay, I'll take over. Our associate producer is Montana McBurney. Our audio engineer is Josh Windisch. This show is hosted by Simplecast.
See, that didn't sound nice.
That sounded great.